Shantena, satisfying. Shamayan, mitigating. Urucha, by his beauty. Translation. At the end of 10,000 years of severe austerities performed by the Prachetas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to reward their austerities, appeared before them in his very pleasing form. This appealed to the Prachetas and satisfied the labor of their austerities. Say after me. At the end of 10,000 years of severe austerities performed by the Prachetas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to reward their austerities, appeared before them in his very pleasing form. This appealed to the Prachetas and satisfied the labor of their austerities. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Performing 10,000 years of severe austerities does not seem like a happy endeavor. Yet the devotees, the serious students of spiritual life, undergo such austerities to attain the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. At that time, when the duration of life was very long, people could undergo severe austerities for thousands of years. It is said that Valmiki, the author of Ramayana, underwent meditational austerities for 60,000 years. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appreciated the austerities undergone by the Prachetas, and he finally appeared before them in a pleasing form. Thus, they all became satisfied and forgot the austerities they underwent. In the material world, if one is successful after hard labor, he is very pleased. Similarly, the devotee forgets all his labors and austerities as soon as he contacts the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although Dhruva Maharaj was only a five-year-old boy, he underwent severe austerities by eating simply dry foliage, drinking only water, and taking no food. In this way, after 6 months, he was able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. When he saw the Lord, he forgot all his austerities and said, Svaman Kritartosmi, my dear Lord, I am very pleased. Of course, the austerities were performed in the Satyuga, Dwarpa Yuga, and Treta Yuga. These austerities were performed in the Satyuga, Dwarpa Yuga, and Treta Yuga, but not in this age of Kali. In this Kali Yuga, one can attain the same result simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. But because the people of this age are fallen, the Lord is kind enough to give them the easiest method. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, one can attain the same results. However, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu points out, we are so unfortunate that we are not even attracted to chanting the Maha mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The text again, at the end of 10,000 years of severe austerities performed by the Prachetas, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to reward their austerities, appeared before them in his very pleasing form. This appealed to the Prachetas and satisfied the labor of their austerities. So Prabhupada says, performing 10,000 years of severe austerities does not seem a happy endeavor. Yet the devotees, the serious students of spiritual life, undergo such austerities to attain the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, first point. Well, the point of the verse is that after it was not a happy endeavor, austerities, the voluntary acceptance of difficulty, deprivation, pain, or whatever, to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's not a happy endeavor. That's what makes it austere. That's why it's called austerity, tapasya. It's some suffering. Either something positive or some deprivation is there that causes discomfort. Why do they undertake such austerities? Because the end result is so nice. And it here said it, they immediately forgot that here was Krishna, and at once they forgot 10,000 years of suffering. So Prabhupada points out that they all became satisfied and forgot the austerities they underwent. In the material world, if one is successful after hard labor, he's very pleased. So the material world, actually, the same system is there, that people postpone sense gratification. They're after sense gratification. But if they're a little intelligent for sense gratification even, they postpone sense gratification and first undergo some austerities. Then, having undergone those austerities, they're in a position to gratify their senses even better than previously. There's various ways of postponing sense gratification, but typically people do this for sake of education. They enroll in some college and university where they postpone sense gratification. Typically, they remain unmarried, for example. They work hard, they study, and in this way, student life is supposed to be traditionally a life of poverty. Students do not live in very spacious accommodations. You live with cockroaches and things like that. Or you live in a dormitory, which has its problems. So this is austerity. But they postpone all kinds of sense gratification for the sake of getting some degree by which they can get a position in society which allows them then to live on a certain economic and social level and thereby prosper. So people do this. They postpone their sense gratification. That much self-control is there. So that's austerity, that's tapasya, even for sense gratification. And so we see often that, and then even in business life or other kinds of life, people again postpone sense gratification and work very hard for the sake of reward. They know in the future something will come of it. So that a person in pursuit of becoming a millionaire works hard and 16, 18 hours a day they work, 80-hour week they work. They're talking on the telephone, they have telephone in their car. People do this now. They have a telephone in their car, telephone in their bathroom, telephone at the restaurant where they eat, and so they're always working. So they do this. They undergo these things, medical school, law school, then even you get out, work very, very hard. But they say, and most of the time they do not enjoy this work. in itself. Many times there's no intrinsic reward, but it's for later on. And it's worth it to them to make that sacrifice. So people who are achievers in the material world, who are serious about attaining their results, and the ones that do attain it, typically these are the people that do like this. And then in the future, something happens, and they get, and then they say, it was worth it. It was worth it. If it wasn't worth it, then they become bitter, disappointed, angry people. But if they say it's worth it to achieve this goal, I finally have achieved, I want to marry a certain woman. She's at first, she's not interested in me. So in order to win her hand, I first have to prove myself. And therefore, in some field of endeavor, I have to excel, vanquish so many rivals, make so much money, work very hard. And now I approach, he says, okay, now I'll marry you. Then, it was worth it. But what we see, of course, in this Kali Yuga, is that even for this, people can't undergo austerity. They can't even perform this minimal, more and more people can't perform this minimal sort of postponed sense gratification. To get an education. And so it's become more and more difficult. People become so greedy and so loss of self-control that even for sense gratification, hard for them to perform any austerities. And so they become simply interested, not in immediate sense gratification. I have to have immediate, it's like children. I can't wait. Children don't understand this. Why do I have to go to school? What is the purpose of going to school? Well, because if you don't go to school, you won't get an education. What do I need an education for? Well, you have to know how to multiply. And I'll get a computer. I'll get a secretary. She can spell. A computer can spell. You know, I don't need this. So they don't understand. Lack of intelligence completely. So you see this in children, inability to even for a little while hold back, or even for the sake of future sense gratification. So this austerity is out of style, and the whole country is suffering even economically. People will not postpone or control their senses sufficiently for even for the sake of economic development. People are less and less serious. So that becomes a difficulty we see also in prosecuting Krishna consciousness, that people having been born in degraded cultures, having been raised in an atmosphere of sense gratification, having been taught immediate sense gratification is best, you want it, you get it, because this is advertising on television and stuff like that, it does not tell you to wait, it tells you to get it right away. You see, it used to be that somebody wanted to get married. First of all, no question of sex life till he was married, so automatically in college and stuff, there was no sex. And then he would also wait after he got a job, and then he would save money. And then when he finally had sufficient money to purchase a house, to purchase appliances, everything, then he would get married, because now he could set up. So he would wait 25, 30 years old, and then he would get married. This was standard, you know, up until maybe, you know, the 1920s or so. But now what happens? Immediately get married. How do I get my house? How do I get my furniture? I charge it. It's a loan. There's no question of saving up, postponing sense gratification until I have the money. No, now, get it right away. Why wait? Take out that plastic card, go to the bank, and get what you want. Buy, you know, enjoy now, later you pay. So people raised like this, when we come to the Krishna consciousness, our mentality is so bad that it's very hard to understand this notion and take up this idea of tapasya. Because even the Prabhupada said, even materially, it goes on, but even that we have no sense of anymore. People are expecting instant sense gratification. Have been put into a culture that's even destroying itself materially because it's forgotten this principle. What to speak of spiritually is not going to happen. So this is our problem in this Kali Yuga, to perform some austerities. So we have to understand that this contamination, this unwillingness. To undergo austerity. Because Prabhupada said it's not very much. There's a letter he wrote in 72 to a devotee. He was saying, what is the meaning of your becoming initiated if you can't follow these things? What is the meaning of being a disciple, calling yourself a devotee? The amount of austerity that we're called upon to perform is so little compared to these examples of Valmiki, the Prachetas, Dhruva Maharaj, and so on. Really, on the scale of actual tapasya that's been performed in the past by people to attain the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what we are asked to do is practically nothing. But for us, oh, this is so hard. I need this so badly. I need my little sex life. I need my little intoxication. How can I go on? This is our degraded mentality. But it's not. It's so minuscule. It's so picayune, actually. But still, we have so many problems. Because even just the idea of it, that we have to perform some austerity, is not really acceptable. And people invent so many cheating ways to think I can somehow or other get spiritual life. Well, that's what's happened. The way spiritual life is being marketed in the West, it's all part of the New Age movement. It's marketing and packaging. And again, what they're promised is that the way spiritual life has become co-opted. Coming out of the East, so many swamis, yogis, roshis, rishis, Sufi masters, this, that, and the other thing, they're all coming. And because it's the American market, actually they're promoting spiritual life as another product. It's packaged, you buy it, and you get this. It's another consumer. People have become like consumers or connoisseurs of various mental states. And it's all sense gratification, another kind of sense gratification. They're just going down the supermarket aisles, and I'll try a little Zen and a little touch of this and a little touch of that. Nowhere any notion austerities there. It's just, let me get it and gratify myself. You become God, you experience the ultimate pleasure, the ultimate thrill, and so on, like that. So this is what's happening. So this is the cheating propensity to want to get something for nothing. Just like people buy on credit, thinking that I can just keep postponing and postponing and postponing and postponing. And that the day of reckoning will never come. Instant gratification. So you have to understand how much this enemy is there. Prabhupada says, yet the devotees, the serious students of spiritual life, undergo such austerities to attain the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is necessary to become a serious student of spiritual life. Serious means I'll undergo these pains, these difficulties. What are our austerities? They're small. Four regulative principles, chanting 16 rounds a day, rising early in the morning, and making every endeavor in every way to avoid sense gratification. To use our mind and senses for Krishna service and therefore not for sense gratification. We don't have to eat forage, leaves and bark. We don't have to drink nothing but water live only on air, or any none of those things. Not to have to breathe, that's a real sensory deprivation. We can breathe all we want. We can actually eat so that we don't have to suffer and learn to endure the pangs of hunger. We can have air-conditioned cars even. When I was in Vrindavan, I was going on the Prikrama path around Govardhan, opposite Govardhan Hill. There was some establishment, Shaivite establishment, and there was a raised platform, and on that platform there were three yogis sitting like this in the sunshine, and they had fires all around them, sitting in the midst of these fires. It was already getting hot, and they were heating themselves up even further with fires. We don't have to do that. But the little austerity we had to, it's too much, it's so hard just to rise early in the morning, it can't be done. And of course, people from this culture, from the West, they think, they say, what do you do for happiness? What do you do for fun? How can you live like that? They can't understand. That's why they think that there must be some dubious psychological process going on to make people devotees, because only somebody that's crazy would voluntarily undertake such a life. That's what they think. And sometimes we think the same thing, because we are so accustomed to lolling around in bed until it's late, to having somebody wait on us hand and foot, not to be the servant, but to find out who can serve us. We're so used to this that we think, am I crazy? What am I doing here sometimes because of this tapasya? But we have to see from this that it says that when the Lord appeared, it said, in his very pleasing form, it satisfied the labor of their austerities. So that's promised, that even if now it's troublesome that we have to undergo this trouble, we should be serious students of spiritual life and understand that satisfaction is there. Even in the material world, after there's some reward after hard labor, there's definite satisfaction. But it's temporary. But you can experience this, like if you've gone to college and graduated from college, there's a satisfaction, there's an elation. You've done the austerity, now you get your degree, your parents there, your uncles there, your aunts there, everybody's very proud, you feel good. And there's always like these little ceremonies, that make you feel good this way, for some achievement. And people who work very hard, like to win an Olympic medal, there's an example of a bodily austerities of monumental proportions that athletes undergo, don't they? If they really want to, is there any athlete that ever won a trophy by simply laying in bed and eating what they want and doing what they want and not to? They're runners, not running. Everybody knows, actually, if you want to become a star athlete, as soon as you don't practice one day, your performance goes down. This is a fact, actually. If you look at any person who's an accomplished at some art or ability, an athlete, a virtuoso musician, a guitarist or a pianist or violinist or whatever, I know thinkers, philosophers, logicians, thinkers like that, they have to stay in constant practice. Just like if a pianist 2 days doesn't play the piano, there's a definite loss of ability. And if a philosopher every day is not straining and working very and exercising at the limit of his capacity, or a mathematician or a scientist, there's a loss of ability. It's a fact. And an athlete who just for 2 days doesn't swim or doesn't run, there's a loss, there's a drop in performance, it's measurable. This is a fact. So these people who are serious about becoming successful at their endeavors, they stay on top of it. They are always working. They're always practicing. And sometimes people can understand that. Somebody wants to win Boston Marathon or the gold medal in the Olympics, and you see them. I remember one time, understanding how much austerity was there, I was at the Boston Temple and I was going down, Newberry Street? Newberry Street. Behind the temple. And to buy something. And I was walking down away from the commons. And I was startled. At first I thought I had run into a case of poisoning or something. There was these big crowds milling around, and there were people lying on the sidewalk, like vomiting and shaking, and people were covered. And then I realized that it was the end of the marathon, and these are all runners who had run the marathon, and they were throwing up and shaking, and people were huddling, and it was horrible. There's all these people that were just limping and. You know, so many things are going on like that. Such suffering. But everybody in the material world, they understand this. Oh, yeah, that's great. You know, real try hard, achieve, win, be something, make something of yourself. But we're doing the austerities we perform. Nobody can appreciate. We can't even appreciate. We can appreciate the austerities that some prize fighter or some Olympic athlete undertakes. But we can't even appreciate why we have to perform austerities, that we forget. But we're athletes of the spirit. If we're serious students, and we have to stay in training. So every day, this is what it means. When we become initiated, what does initiated mean? It means initiated into the process of Krishna consciousness. And when we become initiated, it means we've decided to become athletes. We've decided to become virtuosos. We've decided to become serious about our spiritual life. And that means we have to take this, that every day, we're going to remain in training. And we're going to perform austerities and penances every single day. Without fail. But, of course, we're not used to it. We're used to indulgence. There's certain areas where we can recognize, like athletes, like scholars or something like that, you can be successful at. But these people, they engage in all this. Penance. And why? Because finally when you win, there's such an exhilaration. When after hard work and labor you achieve what they want, there's such exhilaration. It's natural. It's natural like that. And you can't help but like it. This happened to me, but for a number of years I was writing or working on a doctoral dissertation. That's austerity. It's real austerity. And while I was doing it, I realized that it's like a fraternity initiation or something where they put you through this thing just so you can prove that you're going to be part of it. Because it's so hard and such hard work. For one whole year, I spent every day from 9 in the morning to 5 at night in a carrel in the library, day in and day out, just sitting there and reading and reading and reading, reading stuff that is not pleasant or fun to read, in fact having to think very, very hard, then writing and writing and writing and writing all day long. And then after you write a dissertation, you give it to a group of scholars, a committee, and they read it. And they say, okay, now you can, then they give you an examination. So there's these guys sitting in the room, and then they challenge your dissertation. What about this? What about that? And you have to defend it. Actually, other people come too, and they can throw in their 2 cents worth if they want. It's public, you know. So then after that, they send you outside, and they confer among themselves. And then they invite you back in the room, and they say, congratulations, Dr. So-and-so. And everybody, you know, doctor is, you know. So that's what happened. And then I couldn't help it for about a half an hour. I was very, very happy. There was that feeling, you know, of achievement, of exhilaration. If I hadn't been a devotee, it would have lasted longer. But because I was a devotee, I was deprived of this bliss. But it's undeniable that this this feeling is there, even on the material plane. But here, actually, the achievement is Krishna himself. And it's worth it. As it mentions Dhruva Maharaj, that everything you could wish to achieve is achieved when Krishna is achieved. And nothing is left out. It's full promise. There's full satisfaction. And actually, as we advance in Krishna consciousness, what ought to happen as we advance in Krishna consciousness is that we gain a taste for austerities. Because even a little advancement in Krishna consciousness is so delightful and so pleasing and so satisfying that when that advancement comes, just a little advancement, one thinks, oh, this is worth it. This is really what I want. This is exactly what I'm after. I lust and greed and anger going away. I'm becoming happy all the time. I actually see that Krishna consciousness is developing. I'm becoming compassionate toward other living beings. I see the good qualities are starting to develop in me by Krishna's mercy. I see I'm not tormented anymore by envy. Just on that level, just the qualities and the mode of goodness are so nice. Then if one actually begins to taste even like a little fringe of what the holy name is about, then it's so wonderful that one develops a taste for austerities. Because it's these austerities that bring about this Krishna consciousness. Then I want these austerities more and more. And when that taste develops for austerities, then you become really fixed in Krishna consciousness. Then you really have it. But of course, as soon as there's sense gratification, that destroys that taste for austerities. That's the thing. They cannot exist in the same place at the same time, sense gratification and Krishna consciousness. You cannot have a mentality that's Krishna conscious in the same time that is hankering after sense gratification. It doesn't work. One drives out the other. If there's Krishna consciousness, the activities and taste for sense gratification disappears. The taste for Krishna consciousness comes up, since Krishna consciousness disappears. It's just one or the other, not both. There's no, you know, happy balance. People sometimes trying to achieve balance. You know, so much sense gratification, so much Krishna consciousness. You won't get very much of either, really. Your Krishna consciousness will not satisfy you, neither will your sense gratification. It's not a good platform to be on, a conflicting platform. So it doesn't take too much effort, really, of just gritting your teeth and tolerating the heat and the cold, the pleasure and the pain, before the taste for Krishna consciousness arises. It simply takes some resolve and some little bit of practice, but it's almost immediate. But we have to be in the understand. We at least have to be in this mood that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has. It's simple. All we have to do is chant Hare Krishna. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, but I'm so wretched, I don't have any taste for that. But this prayer is instructive. It's a fact that we don't. So we have to be lamenting that fact. This is required. There has to be a mood of humility and lamentation. Because do I have a taste for the holy name? What the taste for the chanting of the holy name means that I want to chant all the time. But I don't. I have to force myself. So why is that? What is this? And so it says, Lord Chaitanya says, first of all, the Lord is so merciful that the manifestations of His holy name are multifarious. Bahuda, namna, makari, baham. You're so merciful that you first of all distributed yourself through so many different names. You can't even count them. There's so many names. And on top of that, not only have you distributed yourself so much through so many names, but on top of that, you've even invested each of these names with all your transcendental potencies. So look at that. There's so many names, and in each of these names contains innumerable transcendental potencies. And on top of that, there's no hard and fast rule of time and place and circumstance for chanting them. This is your mercy. So many names, you've made yourself easily available in your name. So many names are there. Each name has so many transcendental potencies. And on top of that, you can chant any time, any place, anywhere. No hard and fast rules. But I'm such a wretch. And why is that? Because I have so many offenses that I'm not even attracted to this. You're giving me your mercy. You're handing me everything I want. You know, on a silver platter, please take it. And I say, well, I don't know. That's the kind of a creep I am. Because we should understand that if we don't have this, so what it is, because of offenses. Because I am so offensive that I'm not attracted. Because if there isn't spontaneous attraction for chanting the holy name, that is because of offenses. So what must I do? I must regret, like Lord Chaitanya's regret, that I have this offensive attitude. And I must be trying to clear up these offenses. And as soon as that effort is in there, that endeavor is there, let me chant and try to give up these offenses. Let me try to follow the order of my spiritual master. Let me try to engage myself in the culture of the holy name properly so I will not commit offenses. Then immediately there's spiritual progress, and very quickly one does develop a taste and an attraction for the holy name. But this has to be there. So we're not supposed to be consumers anymore. We're not supposed to be just people who gratify their senses. We're supposed to be engaged in this process like athletes to accomplish something. Our goal is a very great goal. It's worth it that people like the Prachetas, like Valmiki, like Dhruva, Maharaj Rishabha, have given us so many instructions. It's worth it to live this life. It's not for sense gratification, but it's for the ultimate satisfaction, full satisfaction, yatma samprasidati, full satisfaction of the soul that is there. The resting place, no more nagging doubt. Because when you achieve it in the material world, your achievement in the material world is always undercut by the fact that it's temporary, immutable, and not ultimately will satisfy you. So that you think in the material world, you think ultimately, oh, I've spent so much time in austerities and penances. I've tried to get this and tried to get that, but now at the end of my life, having gotten everything, I see that still it wasn't worth it. It wasn't worth it. Is there anything that's worth it? So with Krishna consciousness, there'll never be that ultimate letdown. That is guaranteed. So I'll stop there. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu. Well, that's said for us by the acharyas. That is understood. I mean, the Bhagavatam says there's also too much austerity. There's also that proposition. So that we have to take direction on. Just like we have different ashramas. So that allows for different levels of sense gratification. But you have to follow the rules and regulations of your particular ashram. And so within that, then there's so much sense gratification that's allowed. But every devotee should be endeavoring to whatever that situation he is placed in for Krishna consciousness, he has to be endeavoring to minimize. We can take it like, for example, that the best example, as far as eating and sleeping goes, is the example set by the six Goswamis. That I should sleep 2 hours a night and live on a little pat of butter or whatever. Because that's the example. But I also know that I'm not capable of that. So what am I capable of that we've seen from Srila Prabhupada? Your grahastha, live like this. If you're brahmachari, live like this. So I choose, shall I be grahastha, shall I be brahmachari? Can I take one? I can't, then let me choose the other. And you have to follow those rules and regulations very strictly. But in every case, is not to take it as that I've been given, in some sense, there's some so much sense gratification is allowed, but I should be very avid and greedy to enjoy that. That's what I need to maintain my equilibrium in a normal condition of life. But let me also try to more and more eliminate my necessities. So just so that a married man, he has to realize that at the end, sannyas is always there. It has to be there. So therefore, I have to live my married life in order to accommodate this final stage. So ultimately, the goal is to eliminate as much as possible unnecessary sense gratification. But if one undertakes unwisely undertakes austerities, then you lose the strength to even carry on devotional service. Is like when on a morning walk in Denver, Colorado, it was brought up to Prabhupada that many devotees are taking to fasting. People were distressed by this. No, Prabhupada, that's good. Fasting is very good. But then finally, when the devotee said, well, when they do these fasts, you know, because it's for health or something, you know, it's fasting on lemon water and stuff like that. You know, these fasting books and stuff that the guy describes, all the poisons goes out of your body and you chain enlightenment and stuff like that, and total well-being. When they describe that when they did this fast, they ceased to perform any devotional service, then Prabhupada immediately said, it's no good. So the obvious idea, if you can fast and perform your service, then that's favorable. But if your fasting is such like you're not on a level that you can fast, because it's not that when Raghunath Das Goswami was living on devotional service, or was living on, you know, a pat of butter a day or whatever, that he wasn't performing his service. And the output, the literary output, the preaching output of the six Goswamis was enormous. So that's that's the to say no unnecessary sense gratification. Well, what is necessary for one person may be not necessary for another. That's another. That's a thing.